God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Heavenly Father, thank you for your grace and mercy on me. Help us to glorify you tonight by carrying your message. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, we're back in the book after doing the steps we work, and we're on how it works. And we've spent three meetings getting to page 59 to the steps. And I thought tonight I'd try to do, in 30 minutes, cover the 12 steps, everything that's in the big book, quickly. I think I can do it. I've done it many times. I haven't prepared it, so good luck. First, I want to get on page 59, and we read it tonight. We need help from alcohol, and we need one who has all power, not half power. And that one is God. So they give you an instruction here. May you find him now. So you don't want to wait, if you're dying of alcoholism, to find God. And the finding of God that they're talking about here is a relationship with God, where you're trusting and relying upon God, and you're getting his power to give you the power of choice not to drink. So you have to find God and his power, because my power won't work. Get it? Now, they say half measures avail us nothing. Nothing is not good. It won't work with this disease. And half measures, like half steps or half of anything, you have to go all in. And they're giving you a warning. And they're telling you, you're at the turning point if you got to this point in the book. You start with the doctor's opinion, and you're at the turning point now. Are you going to turn away from yourself and you running your life and you being the center of your world to God? And it's a big turn. It's 180 degrees, and to do that requires humility. You have to be defeated. You have to be broken. A lot of people turn, they turn 120 degrees or 90 degrees. And then the 90 becomes 80 and 70. You get it? So if a half measures would be 90 degrees. So you need a 180 degree turn. And where are you turning from? You're turning from yourself to God. You're going to ask for God's protection and care with complete abandon. Can't be holding anything back. You have to be really defeated for this to work. And what you're saying is, my protection for me and my care of me didn't work. So I need to have you, God, because I have no power over alcohol. Do you get it? Now, they're going to tell you, finally, the steps that they took. These aren't the steps that they talked about or they read about. They actually did them. You're going to go up a series of steps to get a relationship with God. If you do six steps, you don't have that relationship. Everybody talks about the four step. That's only a third of the way. It's just the beginning. The four step is the beginning of your relationship with God and getting his power in your life. And they suggest the steps, not that you suggest that we do them. It's suggested as a program of recovery. Now, here's the problem with it. There's only one program of recovery in AA, and that's these steps. Now, a lot of people take the steps to make it their program of recovery, and they do it their program. You'll hear people talking about meetings, I'm in the program. I don't know what that means. You can't be in the program. You're either doing the steps or not. And they mean the fellowship, and they use program and fellowship synonymously, and they're entirely different. You can be in the fellowship of AA and have a great time and go at 90 meetings and go every day and have coffee and camaraderie, but that isn't going to be the answer to your problems. The answer to your problems is that AA should take you to these steps and that you do these steps, and then you have a power to live. The fellowship is great, but it doesn't have the power over alcohol. It's to get you to do the steps to get to the power, you see? And people lose that because we're big in fellowship now, and we have discussion meetings, which are great, but I think the people would be better served to go through the steps and the book. And that's why I do this meeting, so at least the people who come will know what's in the book. And it's helped me a lot, and I hope it helps you. So this is the program of recovery, so I'm going to go through these steps and see how we do. You think we'll finish 12 steps in 30 minutes? Who wants to bet on this? It may not happen. We have Saturday morning. Stop it. So the first step is that we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, dash, their lives are become unmanageable. Now, that's not the first step in recovery, is it? No. The first step in recovery is at the beginning of More of Alcoholism. It says we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that I'm an alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. The idea that I someday, somehow will be like other people has to be what? Smashed. So you can't come to AA and find that you're powerless over alcohol. You have to come to AA after you admit, fully concede to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic. Now they spend 58 pages of doctor's opinion telling you what makes you an alcoholic. And somebody's calling Stu, and I'm going to send the voicemail. There you go. All right, and so what makes you an alcoholic? Because the first step, you admit you're powerless over alcohol. So what makes you an alcoholic is what makes you powerless over alcohol. Now, there's a dash that my life had become unmanageable. Before I talk about what makes you an alcoholic, I'm going to talk about the dash. The hyphen is where people die. They can't see the connection between an unmanageable life run by me and being powerless over alcohol. So what's the connection? When I'm running my life, I have expectations and I have rights, and I have a plan on how people should be, and I have this delusion that I'm going to wrest satisfaction and happiness out of life if I just manage well. If they'd only do what I want, I'd be happy. It's never going to happen. So I was always irritable, restless, and discontented. And I had fear, and I had judgment and resentment, and I had shame and guilt because I took bad actions to fix it. Now, when I'm managing my life and I'm running it, then alcohol becomes the solution. Because when I drank, it changed the way I felt. And I learned that alcohol, it could be drugs, it could be anything, that changes the way you feel. If you're an alcoholic, you're going to be dependent on it. Because we drink because we want the sense of ease and comfort from alcohol. And you can use drugs or alcohol, it's interchangeable. And you're going to always seek that ease and comfort if you're managing your life. Now, that makes you powerless over alcohol because my mind can't say no to alcohol when I'm irritable, restless, and discontent. I seek the ease and comfort. Why can't my mind say no? Because willpower won't work. You can memorize the big book. You can read it in Aramaic. But it won't give you power over alcohol. The only thing that gives me power over alcohol is God. Why won't willpower work? Because right before I drink or use, I can only think about what it's going to do for me and not to me. I can't separate the truth from the false at the moment I decide to drink. Did anybody have that problem or use? And you know it's bad, and the next day you say, oh, how'd that happen? Well, you're managing the world, you get irritable, restless, and discontent. Your mind seeks the, and once your mind seeks the ease and comfort of alcohol, you can't say no to it. Because your mind's been damaged. And then we have a problem because we're alcoholics, so we have an allergy to alcohol. So when we drink too much. Anybody do that? So we need to say no to alcohol, but we can't say no to alcohol because we're powerless over it, because I'm managing my life. You see the relationship? And so if you're going to still come here and think you can run your life and not work these steps and not drink or use again, it's not going to happen. Now, you could be a hard user or a hard drinker, and you don't need a spiritual solution, and then you don't have to do this. But if you have what they had, and I have what they had, I was really, I screwed up mine, then I need God. I have no power to say no. So that's the first step. You have to admit you're powerless over alcohol. You have an allergy to alcohol, and your mind cannot say no to it when you get obsessed with the idea of alcohol, and it's because you're managing your own life. So when you're managing your life, you're going to drink again. So the solution is not to not drink. That helps. And it's not to have the allergy, because you can't change that. But the solution is not to manage your life anymore. See what the first step is really saying? And then it says, I came to believe that a power greater than me could restore me to sanity. Now, the sanity that I need restored to is to be able to see the truth about alcohol on the way to the liquor store and say, no, bad idea. Now, they say, think through the first drink. Well, that just gets you the second drink. You can't think it through because you have the disease. Now, you can think it through with God. Now, if you can think it through and say, bad idea, and turn around, that's God. That's the only thing that can come between you and the next drink or the next fix. And I have to come to believe that there's a power greater than me, it has to be greater than me, can restore me to this sense of truth about alcohol. And also, what I need to restore to sanity is my thinking, my ideas. Because my old ideas were killing me, right? And I have to let go of them 100%. And my old ideas was everything I thought I knew when I came in here. All my judgments, all my fears, everything that I thought I needed to be happy and satisfied. And so how did they come to believe? Well, the big book says, are you willing to believe or do you believe that there's a power greater than yourself? And it says if you can believe or you're willing to believe, then you're on your way. And this is going to be the cornerstone of the arch to freedom. So what we're building with the steps is an arch to freedom from the bondage of self into the arms of God in his world, so we're leaving ourselves into the loving hands of God. And the foundation of that is built on the first step is pain, is become willing to change because your life is so miserable and everything's caving in on you. And I hope when you come here, you're as miserable as I was. It was great, it was a gift. It's a gift of desperation when you can't go on anymore. And I can still remember how bad it was, the fear, the overwhelming unmanageability of my life. And yet I still went to work and still looked okay, who knows. But it was bad. And so it's the pain that makes you willing to change. You don't want to stay. And then you believe you can change. And how do you come to believe? You come to the meeting and you see people who are celebrating birthdays who tell you how bad it was and how they've changed. And you see somebody in the meeting and they talk and you say, boy, I'll go visit with him afterwards, and he tells you how bad it was and what he did. He worked these steps out of the book, and now he's not obsessed with drinking, and he has peace of mind, and he has serenity, and he can trust and rely upon God. So we're to help people come to believe by how we are, our story, what happened, what it was like, what it's like now. And we want new people to get that. That's why we stay in the book. Because that's what the book is all about. It helps you come to believe. It helps you admit your powerless over alcohol because it explains how it is. And so the first two steps, you don't need to work long if you're really desperate. If you live the first step, you either can see your powerless over alcohol, can see your unmanageable life, and if you don't, keep drinking and using and see if you ever reach that point. And the reason people die is they're constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. And they can't be honest that their life is miserable because they're managing it, and they're miserable because they can't stop drinking. And it's never going to get better, and they have no plan to fix it. So when you can see the truth about your disease, then you've really taken the first step. And I can't take the first step with someone. I can't give them the gift of desperation. And some people come in, I see they're not done. Maybe their wife should leave them or they should go drink some more. My first sponsor, Cliff, used to say, buy them more booze. He heard people blabber at meetings and he said, then get them more booze. He was a great man, he loved them, but we want people to get defeated. We want them broken. This book is not for people having a bad day. It's not for people who took the interstate and should have taken Wanamaker and got a DUI. And so you take the first step. You have to take yourself. People can explain to you their situation. You can see if you have the same experience. Then you come to believe based on what people have told you about them and what they did that there is a power that can help you. And you can see it at meetings. You should see the presence of God. And it doesn't take long to be willing to stand at the turning point and turn completely away from the way your life was. It has to be 180 degrees. So the first two steps shouldn't take very long if you're really defeated. And so then step three is to make a decision to turn my will, which is my thinking, my life, and my actions over to the care of God as we understood him. And they start this by you're now at step three, which means you're convinced that a life run on self-will will never work. Now, if you're not convinced that a life run on self-will can never work, the original book said, then reread these first pages up to this point or throw it away. because you have to be convinced that your life running it is never going to work. Now, they then give you two pages where they show you what it's like. You're the actor running the show instead of the director running the show. You have a script for how the actor should be on the stage with the ballet, the scenery, everything. And then you say, wouldn't it be great if everybody would just do as I want? Well, that's really insane, but that's how we think, because we're the center of the world. And then it says, that what was my basic trouble? Wasn't I always a self-seeker when trying to be kind? I was always seeking something for me. And Joe and Charlie said, you never did anything for anybody that you didn't get something out of it unless it was by mistake. And think about it. And then it says, I had the delusion that I could wrest satisfaction, happiness by managing well. And I started when I was 5 years old. If I could just get good grades or get on the all-star team or do something, mother would love me, she'd approve me. So my alcoholism started way before I ever drank. My alcoholism was trying to get the world arranged so I would feel good about myself. And I was trying to get self-esteem by other people's approval. So I made the world my higher power. I did it in relationships. It was a mess. I remember I was so excited when I got my internship at the University of Chicago. It was very prestigious. It was very hard to get. They only had 20 spots, blah, blah, blah. So it's December and I'm starting my car at 1 in the morning because if I didn't start it wouldn't go the next day. And I'm working my bike off and it's miserable. It's the coldest winter they ever had. And I wanted to get that internship because I thought everybody back at the University of Maryland would talk about me, how great he was because he got the internship. And here I am in this miserable, killing myself, and it's frigid and my car doesn't start. I said, well, you know, maybe I should have stayed in Baltimore. You get it? You see, we think we do things so we get approval from others, but nobody really cares. Nobody really cared. Now, it turned out it was good for me, but you see the motivation. And then it says that my problems were my own making. They rose out of me, and I'm a self-will run riot. And there's nothing that's going to fix it except God. I can't decide I'm not going to be self-centered. It's impossible. I'm still self-centered. But I don't feel good now, so I do steps 10 and 11. I get back to God. And so it says we had to stop playing God. Why? It doesn't work. Now, it took me a while because I'm not as smart as some. I see some really smart people in here. But it took me a while to realize that it's never going to work because I'm not God. It seems so simple, right? But playing God when you're not God is never going to work. So I was insane. In fact, if they would take visions of our minds the last week, before you came in here, we'd all, and they put on CNN. Can you imagine? They want to lock us up. And we're walking around driving our cars. It looked like, you know, we're normal people, but we should be in an institution. I mean, we were really crazy people. And so it says I had to quit playing God. God's going to be my director. He's my father. I'm going to follow him. This idea is simple. And what is it? It's the keystone of the arch to freedom. So the foundation is willing to change from the pain of the first step in managing my life. The second, the cornerstone is the belief that there is a power that can restore me and change me. And then the keystone of this arch is that God's going to be my director. And he's going to run my life, not me. And it says once we make this decision, what happens? We start feeling better. And it says we now make a contract with God. Did you know that? You write a contract with God on page 63. Most people don't know that. And it says, God will give me everything I need. That's good. God's giving me everything I need. And all I have to do is stay close to him and do his work well. And then everything will be great. And then there's one other thing. God has worry. So did anybody worry today? If you worried about anything, you were playing God. And so you give God worry, and he's going to give me everything I need, and all I have to do is stay close to him and do his work well. That's what it says. Now, how do you stay close to him? You do these steps. And how do you do his work? His work is to vision of God's will for us on page 85. How can I be of service to him and others? And so, and then it says, this idea was simple, But as soon as we take the step, we start feeling better. And we're reborn, because we're no longer completely self-centered. And so it's, then we say the third step prayer. And it says after third step prayer, warning. Before you take the step, be ready to abandon yourself completely to God. They put that after the prayer. And why? Because if you're not going to give God 100%, it's not going to work. It's like I was a cancer doctor, so I said, well, I'm going to give you this medicine, but we're only going to treat 95% of your cancer. And don't worry, the 5%, you know, it won't kill you for a while. So you can't do 95% abandon the God, because the 5% you hold back is going to kill you. Now, how do you know if you've completely abandoned yourself to God? It's a good question. You're doing step four. You're doing the steps, you're taking the action, you're on your way. And then it says, this step is vital. It's vital that you take step four. It's necessary for life and crucial, but it won't have any permanent effect. It's not gonna do any good unless next and at once is followed by a complete desire to find out everything that's blocking you from God. And it says liquor's just a symptom. And then says we get down to causes and conditions. So now you're at step four. And step four is where you're going to look at the things that are blocking you from God. So if you want God to run your life, anybody want that? Because you can't run it. Then you have to unblock your mind so God can get in there and work. So step four isn't very complicated. It says, you know, we're going to look at the facts, face the facts, and face and be rid of the things that are blocking us. And it says we get down to causes and conditions. We're going to look at the manifestations of a life run on self-will. And the manifestations are the, when I'm living on self-will, what does it look like in my head? And it says resentment is the number one offender. So we're going to look at my resentments in my head that are blocking me from God. Resentment is wrong judgment. Anybody ever do that? And we do it all the time. We can't help ourselves. We wake up with a judgment machine, alcoholics, and we have to stop using it all the time. And so resentment is wrong judgment. It's negative feelings. It's letting people bother you. You don't like them. They don't approve of them. They're not acting the way you want them. You have expectations for them. They're not doing it right. They're not treating me right. Anybody have that? And they don't look at me right. I know they don't like me. So I'm going to hate them because they don't look at me right. It sounds completely insane. But we do that. So resentment's the number one thing, and it blocks us from God. And it says when we straighten out spiritually, we straighten out mentally and physically. And so we have to straighten our relationship with God, and then our mind straightens out, and then physically we straighten out with the world. So steps 1, 2, 3 is how we get right, where God's gonna be the center. 4, 5, 6, and 7 is where I get right in my mind, and I can see the truth about my thinking. And 8, 9 is where I get right with the world when I'm making amends. And so we look at resentments, we put them on paper, we make a list of these things, then we look at why we're threatened, we all get what we think they did, because a lot of times they didn't do what we think they did. And then we look at why we're threatened. You don't get resentment unless you feel some threat from someone. And they're not treating me right, they're threatening my pride, my self-esteem, my sex life, my material life, my social life. And then you make those, and then on page 66 and 67, they tell us how to be free of anger. It's in the big book, isn't that something? Anybody get angry? You can get free of it in 3 paragraphs in the big book. It says we have to be free of anger, and this was our course. So here's what they do. They decide that the people that they were angry at were perhaps spiritually ill, just like me. They're human beings. They are what they are. And so I want to change the way I see him by asking God, one, the first prayer is, God, give me love, patience, and tolerance for blank, whoever it is. 2, how could I be helpful to them? 3, God, save me from being angry at them. And 4, give me a kind and tolerant view of them. Now, you get tired of saying the prayers. So when you start judging somebody, you say, well, nah, you know, they are who they are. And you can get free of anger. And then it says we look at our mistakes. That's the 4th column. Not their mistakes. We put out of our mind anything we think they did because we've forgiven them in the process of saying the prayers. It's not important what they did. Just forgive them. If you're not willing to forgive them, keep saying the prayers and pray for them. Why are you not going to forgive somebody? Well, then you still have a resentment. And if you want to be forgiven by God, we all want to be forgiven, and we all did a lot of bad things. Anybody not do any bad things in here? Oh, good. And we want to be forgiven, so that we have to forgive them. See, and then you look at your mistakes. What did you actually do that caused the resentment? And then that's really bad, because then you see that you caused the resentment. They weren't that bad, and you owe them amends. It's a son of a blank, because you come in here hating these people, and then you realize you have to make amends to them. And you caused all of this. But it doesn't take long to do those four columns, to do what I just told you. And then you make a list of all your defects. And then you have them for your step 6 and 7. Because your fear and your resentments are activated by your self-centered character defects. And you're always going to have self-centered character defects like selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, fear, gluttony, lust, greed, prideful, impatient. Any impatient people here? Intolerant? I'm very impatient. And that's always going to be there when you're playing God. Then it says we look at fear. Anybody ever have fear? Well, fear is wrong belief. And it says we had fears. Our whole life had an evil and corrosive thread through it because of fear. My whole life was ruined by fear. Because when I have fear, I get resentment of whatever I'm afraid of. Or I have fears because I'm not willing to trust God. So it said self-reliance failed me. I read that, I said, wow. The first time I said that really hit me. I had the wrong manager. I wasn't a bad person. I was relying on the wrong person. So it says you have to live on a different basis, trusting and relying upon God. And you want to trust infinite God rather than finite self. And then it says, just as we play the role he assigns and we stay close to him, we can handle calamity with serenity. That's a good line, isn't it? Because that's the line I saw when they told me my son died. I could see it. I could see it in the book. Just, we are in the world to play the role God assigns. I'm to play God's role, not mine. Just to the extent that I do as I think he would have me and humbly rely on him, I can handle calamity with serenity. That's what the book of Job's all about. That's what it's all about. You can handle calamity with serenity. You don't have to be happy. You want to be serene. And so, and then it says, when we have fear, we ask God to remove it. So whenever I have it, I say, God, remove my fear and direct my attention to what you would have me be, not do. And we talk about, some people talk about doing the next right thing. It's you want to be the next right thing. Your being determines your doing. If you're loving, kind, tolerant, considerate, compassionate, you're going to be that way, you're going to get that reaction. You want to bring love in every situation. It's hard to do. I don't do it all the time, but I try. To remove my fear and direct my attention to how I should be. And that ties in with step 10 when it says we carry vision of God's will in all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. It's all connected. It's not separate. Then it talks about sex, because relationships are a killer in AA. And they don't have to be male, female. They could be relationships with your boss or with your in-laws or your brother and sister or her parents. And it's endless. But the sex relationships, we have to see where we harm people, where we use them, where we were selfish, dishonest, resentful, or fearful, and inconsiderate. Did we arouse jealousy, bitterness? Were we at fault? What should we have done instead? And we get this down on paper, and then we're going to shape a sane, sound sex ideal so we have relationships so we don't use people anymore to get our self-esteem built by using them, especially in sex relationships. And that's all you do in the fourth step. And then it says when you've done that, you started to have a relationship with God. You sense his presence, the nearness of him. And it says, then you go to step 5, which I do together with people, 4 and 5. And step 5 step 4 is where we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. So what we just did is we're inventorying our thinking. We're inventorying our judgment, our beliefs, and our actions. And then we're seeing the root of them as my character defects. And that's what you admit to God, yourself, and another human being in step 5, is that when I'm in self, I'm going to be selfish, dishonest, resentful, afraid, intolerant, inconsiderate, not compassionate, judgmental. You get it? And I don't want to have those character defects dominating my life, because then I'm going to have resentments and fears and harm people. So what we're seeing is our tree in 4 and 5, as you see how Michael's tree, when he came in, was planted in Michael's soil, and the bark was rotting, and the leaves were falling off, and the tree looked like crap. Why? Because it was in the wrong soil. And the bark is all the character defects, and the branches are all full of resentment, fear, and shame, and guilt. Who wants that tree? Anybody want it? No. So they're telling you, okay, you're going to replant your tree in God's soil. And then the bark is going to be the character of God, which is the right-hand side. And then on the leaves, you're going to have love and patience and tolerance and compassion. And you're not going to have resentment and fear. You're not going to harm people anymore. And then when you live in God's soil, you're going to have peace and serenity. When you live in Michael's soil, you're going to be a mess. Now, you see that in 4 and 5, and then 10 and 11 is where you're replanting your tree all day long. And you see when you're back in Michael's soil, it's not going, well, I've got to get back in God's soil. It's not that complicated. And so, in the exact nature of my wrongs is what you admit in 5. Your wrongs are your wrong judgment, your wrong belief, and your wrong actions. And then the exact nature, what caused you to have them, is you're planted your soil with your character defects. You see that? Then in 6, you want to be entirely ready to get rid of all those character defects because they're killing you, right? All of them. So that's why we have these cards that Scott C. made years ago. And we carry these around. I have extras if you want. If you go to work, put them on your desk. I would have a rough day at work and starting to get tense because everything's going bad. There are all these problems. They're scheduling the people wrong. They're getting worse, blah, blah. You can't. So the nurse would go, doctor, you've covered up your card. So I'd uncover it, and then I'd hold the card, and I'd see that it's all going to be okay. Does this make sense? And so they started having their cards. And I would hear them out there say, you're covering up your card. And then I had the God pole in the carder that I would hold when things got really bad. I just hold it. So I just, okay, what do I need to do right now, the next thing? And I'd see that they'd see me holding the pole some days, and they'd say, what's wrong, doctor? I said, oh, no, I'd forgot, I'm just holding the pole. And I'd see them go out there and hold the pole, because practicing cancer medicine was pretty stressful. So you're entirely ready to get rid of all these defects of character. How am I doing? Oh, I'm not going to make it. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Humbly ask him. Now, some people think you do the step one time and you say the prayer on page 76 and then you're done with it. No, this is to be done every minute for the rest of your life. How do you know when you need to do 6 and 7? You don't feel good. You're disturbed. You're resentful or you're fearful or you've done something terrible. You said a horrible thing, or you sent the wrong email, or you yelled at somebody, or told them they're stupid. Anybody ever do that? Probably is a requirement for membership. I thought that was pretty funny. Nobody
laughed. I will.
Right, there you go. All right. So we're going to stop with 7, and then on Saturday I'm going to pick up with the last 4 steps. But I think that's a pretty thorough review of the first 7 steps and how they all work together. So, James, I hope you appreciate it.